Okay, we have a motion on the board. Motion to substitute. Anything further on the motion to substitute? Get your bearings. Anything further on the motion to substitute? Ready for the question? Sally?
Sorry, I was hesitating just looking at it procedurally. There had been some discussion before the break about which of the new alternatives that we're considering today would be viable from an implementation perspective, given that the framework is going to be submitted late, which was making this the combined measure 1.2 that's on the board right now less viable, since people wouldn't be able to have the option of using their a larger trip in the springtime prior to the closure, when they would be limited to a lower trip limit of 14,000. So that seemed like that wasn't going to be a viable alternative. So I would offer, if I could, Mr. Chairman, an amendment to the substitute, if that's the proper thing to do. To adopt combined measure 1.3, option B, as an RPM alternative in framework 21.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaithel for discussion. Sally?
I think we had quite a bit of discussion on this already this morning. I'm trying to get something up there that's going to improve the compliance with the terms and conditions put forward in the biological opinion. This does that. The impact on the fishery in terms of change in F is negligible. If you take a look at page 15 of document 10 that we've been working from for the past couple of hours, the net of the combined alternatives, change in F for combined measure 1.3 option B is very little in terms of change in F, and it is greater than what the committee brought forward, which in terms of reduction of effort in the access areas during the turtle season to 18%, whereas what the committee brought forward was 10%. So this is an improvement in terms of meeting the terms and conditions of the BIOP, and the impact on the fishery is not nearly as severe as the other alternatives that the committee considered, and it's trying to fit the bill a little bit closer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Pat Kirk.
I do think that given that the framework is not going to be implemented until sometime into the fishing year, that some of the other alternatives on the table are problematic. So,
rest of the council, Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I originally, and I guess I still do, support the committee's original motion. I think it was enough, but I also think at this point, given the advice from the service, I will support this motion.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just point out that if we had followed the original committee motion and didn't have this additional measure in place, that some of the boats in the Mid-Atlantic fleet certainly would have executed all three trips during this window. It is a 75-day window, roughly. So I think this will provide an additional layer of conservation for the turtles in the Mid-Atlantic region, and I would support the motion.
Anyone wishing to speak against on the council? Against the motion? Ready for the question? Motion to amend the substitute. All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Now we're on the substitute motion as amended. It's the same question. Devoted again. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Now we're on the main motion as substituted and amended. So this is the final vote on this question. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 16 opposed. Abstentions? One abstention. D.
I just want to clarify, make sure I get this right for the final framework. I have a few, not really questions, I just want to point them out. This would not change any possession limits outside of the window because of that F issue I raised. There could be some potential small issues of F, of any kind of shift from the window outside. We're not going to adjust the possession limits to account for that. It's minor. I just want to clarify the possession limits would stay the same outside the window. The other thing I wanted to point out, this one in particular, these values will change when the final framework analysis is done during lunch and so forth. This alternative is different than the others in that it's related to identifying a certain subset of vessels that would have maybe taken three trips, which is different than all the other ones. So just expect that these values will be different in the final one. And I had one other point I wanted to clarify. Possession limit that, sorry, I can't remember. So I guess it's clear.
Sally?
Yeah, I'll just look right back to Deirdre, where that was the last major, not really, I mean, there's one more major issue on the table that we'll get to when we get to the overlap between scallop and groundfish. But there are several minor decisions in the framework, and I'll just ask Deirdre to step us through them one at a time. And there is at least one committee motion that I'll make after she gives the explanation.
I remembered my other point, if that's okay, if I could just clarify. Trading of trips is still going to be allowed. If you happen to trade a Nantucket Lightship trip for an additional Mid-Atlantic Access Area trip, you would still be restricted to the same two-trip maximum. If you happen to have four Mid-Atlantic or five Mid-Atlantic, something like that, you'd still be okay. So trading trips is included in the provision. Thank you. Okay, minor decisions. Starting on slide 13 of the presentation, going back to that, I mentioned this morning at the last committee meeting there was an interest to possibly consider including a provision to allow partial leasing of limited access general category IFQ, and that would be in partial amounts rather than in full blocks, which is currently the requirement. And it would also allow more flexibility during the year. Currently, the restriction is that all of these transactions have to take place by a certain time before any fishing occurs of that leased quota. So the document number 9 is a single sheet of paper that was handed out. The committee passed this motion. Let's go to slide 25. I was earlier in the presentation. I'm sorry. It's the same information. The committee motions on the board would be to add that alternative. It carried 701. And again, document 9 is some language that staff worked on with National Marine Fisheries Service in terms of potential language you could consider. You see in the middle of page 1 in document 9 is the no action described, and it basically clarifies that vessels would be required to transfer IFQ in full amounts prior to fishing activity. That's the no action. And again, the committee didn't have specific language in mind and asked staff to work on it after the committee meeting before this meeting. And that's what you see on the bottom of page one, which leads on to page two. There's a couple very specific provisions about when these transactions would have to occur. The council should, if you decide to include this, determine what the most appropriate minimum allocation amount should be permitted. The committee was silent on that in terms of it being 10 pounds and so forth. The only other question I had is that this is all written in terms of pounds, when in reality they get contribution factor amounts. So I wasn't sure if we wanted to actually change this to some portion of a contribution amount, because of course the pounds are going to change each year. That's just a minor thing, technical thing. But so the issue is whether you want to include the second alternative to allow partial IFQ. The committee's rationale is right above in the middle of the page in terms of why they supported including this motion. And it's there for you. In terms of analyses, you know, it's not really in the document yet, so we haven't completed very detailed analyses of this. But in general, it would improve flexibility for these vessels, should not have any impacts on the resource and so forth. So it's generally increased flexibility and positive for people engaged in leasing.
Rep.
D, as it says in the motion, the intention was not to, it says not to slow down the implementation of Framework 42, but obviously to delay the finalization of the document and stuff. Is your sense that this, if the motion gets passed here today, that it's doable, or it, will it have in any way an impact that would delay the submission of Framework 21?
I think the concern at the committee level was we weren't sure how much in the regulations we'd have to adjust them to allow for something like this, but staff was able to work with the regional office since the meeting to provide page two, and as far as I'm concerned, if this is fine and they drafted it and it works from a regulatory standpoint, the analysis is minor.
Thank you. I have a committee motion to offer on this, and that is to add an alternative in Framework 21 that would allow leasing of partial allocations in amounts equal to or greater than 100 pounds throughout the fishing year with existing applications and protocols. It is understood that the intention is not to slow down implementation of Framework 21. That's a committee motion, and it carried 7-0 with one abstention. Deirdre largely offered the rationale that was discussed at the committee meeting. Just one other item I'll add. This was an issue that came up in the amendment where Amendment 11 was not implemented largely due to, at least in my recollection, the committee discussed that at the time the service wasn't clear if they would be able to keep track of smaller increments of quota, and my understanding is that that has been resolved.
Okay, so we have a committee motion. I had Rodney.
Yeah, I had a question, but I think that just answered my question, because I was going to say the allocation may change year to year, but the trading unit will end up in pounds. And if we accept this, that's what it does.
Pat?
If the motion passes, I think the council would need a subsequent motion to decide what the minimum would be.
I'm going to need a little help recalling this. The motion itself says that we're talking about amounts equal to or greater than 100 pounds.
But then the document that was distributed references 10 pounds. So I'm just going to look for some help in recalling what this is, and if there's you know, an increment that is more workable from the services perspective. I just don't remember if that was something that we talked. I know we didn't talk about it at the last committee meeting. And as Deirdre pointed out, this was worked out subsequent to that motion being adopted, and we were, you know, working. The committee offered 100 pounds as a starting point, but it looks like maybe the agency is able to deal with smaller increments.
Well, we can certainly deal with the 100 pounds. We could deal with smaller increments, but of course, at some point, it just doesn't become cost effective. We don't want it to go all the way down to 1 pound, and something like 10 pounds might even be unreasonable. So I don't have a good sense of it. I think administratively we could deal with smaller amounts, but it certainly does seem that at some point you want to make the decision on. You don't want to be trading really, really small amounts of, or leasing really, really small amounts of the quota.
Jim Fair. All set. Anyone else in the council? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't see any need in this to deal with amounts smaller than 100 pounds. That was our intent at the committee meeting, and I don't think that we need to go to any amount smaller than that. The whole intention behind this is to allow the small boat, primarily small boat fishery, to have as much ability to ply their trade as is possible. They need to have the small boat has to be light on its feet. It has to be able to do a lot of different things, and this simply provides them with that opportunity. They need that kind of flexibility, and I don't think it's a big thing. I think that with the exception on page 2, everything there seems to be acceptable, with the exception that under the most appropriate minimum allocation amount, I would think that 100 pounds is adequate. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Sally.
So the way the motion reads, and based on the discussion here, then it would be considered in increments of 100 pounds.
Anyone else in the council? Go to the audience. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Associated Fisheries of Maine supports this motion. I just had a question, though, about the 100-pound minimum and whether that would, let's say that somebody has an allocation, that's what they end up is less than 100 pounds. Are they still going to be able to transfer that whole thing to someone else? Under the existing rules, they could, correct? So we don't want to eliminate that possibility. Okay, thank you. Right. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the audience, or back to the council. Anything further from the council? Glenn?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first part of it says in amounts equal to or greater than 100 pounds, and then at the end it says would be in increments of 100 pounds. So in my mind that means, the first part means at least 100 pounds, maybe more. The second means 100-pound blocks. Is there some clarification on that?
The will of the council. David?
The way I read that is it's in increments of 100 pounds unless you've got, say, 178 pounds, then you can transfer 178 pounds or whatever. But if you've got, you know, increments of 100 pounds, the minimum you can do is 100 till you get to your last increment. Then you can get rid of whatever's left. That's how I would read it. Or if you've, the same as what Maggie said, if you've got less than 100 in the first place, you can transfer the entire amount. But the minimum increment is 100 pounds unless you've got less than 100 pounds to transfer, and you can just transfer whatever you've got that's left.
Pat?
So let me say that the way I understand it and make sure everybody understands it the same way, you can transfer your entire allocation if it's less than 100 pounds. Otherwise, you have to transfer a minimum of 100 pounds.
Can we just delete the parentheses and then everything's...
You want to delete the parens?
Did it. Yeah. All set. Yeah.
Is there objection to that? Does it read better now? Everyone understand it? Mark?
It still doesn't say what you just said.
It doesn't say it the way I just said it because half of what I said is already part of the regulations. So this is just a change to one provision of the regulations. It does not affect the current authorization to allow a transfer, a full transfer of your TAC.
Pat, if someone has 250 pounds, can they transfer 150?
Yes.
Okay.
Anything further from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Sixteen. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries. Sally?
Back to Deirdre for the provisions on the observer set-aside program, page 37 of the draft framework document.
Not a lot to say on this. There are two alternatives in the document on slide 26 of the presentation. Just basically, does the council want to include either of these two or both of the measures related to the observer program? The committee does not have a recommended preferred alternative. Primarily, we ran out of time. Both alternatives have been identified as ways to indirectly improve monitoring and effectiveness of the program. They certainly aren't going to fix a lot of the issues that have come up about the program, but they would hopefully address parts of the issues that have come up. Sally mentioned the page that they're on. One is related to non-payment. To make that a stricter part of the permit process. And the other one would be to restrict the compensation general category vessels could get on access area trips. In terms of impacts, there's really no direct impacts from either of these measures, again, except for those indirect benefits on improved monitoring and effectiveness of the program.
So I don't have a committee motion on these. I don't know if there's a desire to have a discussion about these two items that Deirdre just went over. The committee didn't have a recommendation. The one other piece I have is that the advisory panel did not support provision 2.9.1.2, including observer payment provision as part of the annual permit renewal process. Which would basically mean if someone had an outstanding bill with an observer provider, their permit, they wouldn't be able to go fish until they reconciled that bill.
We have no committee motions. Anyone on the council wish to make a motion? Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make a motion that the council approve section 2.9.2, suboption B, which would set the observer compensation rate annually as with the day at sea scallop fleet and allow general category vessels observer compensation equivalent to one day regardless of trip length.
Is there a second? It's page 38, document one. 37 and 38, right. Is there a second? Rodney? Discussion. Mary Beth?
I made this motion because there's been some discussion in both fleets, quite frankly, as to the current compensation rate and the concerns that occurred this year where the program, the compensation was used up early, and the limited access fleet is paying, you know, full observer cost, and primarily they were saying that you could reduce it at this point and not have a negative economic impact on the vessels, and they could still go. So this just provides flexibility. And we have the flexibility with the limited access fleet, but not, I guess, with the general category. So you could look at this annually, figure out what the, you know, what the appropriate rate would be, and it would be limited to one trip. So I mean, that takes care of the problem. Currently, I don't know to what extent the problem is, but it sounds like a general category vessel can leave on a, you know, Tuesday at 10 o'clock at night, and it counts as one day. They fish the next day, and then they land on the Thursday at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they'll get three compensation days for what is really a one-day trip. So it seems to cover the problem adequately, and that's why I made the motion.
Any further comment? Anyone in the audience? Ron?
Ron Smolowitz for Fishery Survival Fund. We support this motion. It's very important to have the correct amount of compensation, both for the limited access and the general category fleet, so that behavior isn't influenced that would influence the data being collected. And that this motion goes a long way towards solving that problem. There are other issues, but this is a good start for this particular framework. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries. 16-01. Dr. Pierce.
I'd like to return to 2.9.1, the provisions to discourage the vessel owners from not paying deployed observers. In the no-action section, in the second paragraph, there's a reference to the Northeast region's enforcement attorneys currently discussing the protocol for how to handle delinquent observer payments, and will work out the details with enforcement agents and with the observer program. Can we have an update regarding that, since it suggests in the no-action alternative that if indeed the enforcement attorneys can work things out, perhaps we would not need to consider 2.9.1.2. In other words, we could continue to move forward with no action. That's my question is, do we have any resolution of this issue for the regional office?
I don't know the status of it, and I don't think there's anyone here from enforcement or general counsel enforcement. I do know that there's been a lot of discussion about it, that work is continuing. I just don't know the status.
Okay. Well, in reviewing the two options, no action versus the alternative, the second alternative seems attractive. I would move that we adopt 2.9.1.2, include observer payment provision as part of the annual permit renewal process.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaethel. Discussion. Pat.
I don't support the alternative, and I know that there is some support for it within the organization, and I know the observer program is concerned. But from my perspective, these are private businesses, and and I'm not sure it's appropriate for us to get into the business of collecting delinquent payments on behalf of the private businesses, not directly collecting, but at least enforcing the collection of. So I've got a problem and a concern with it just from a policy perspective.
Rodney.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked this question at the committee, and I said if somebody has an outstanding payment and they're selected to take an observer, and that vendor does not put an observer on that person because he owes them money, that vessel cannot sail. That should be enough of a deterrent right there. I mean, now we're going to be collecting somebody's outstanding bills.
Dave Gaither.
Yeah. I mean, we're the ones that require the observers. We should be the ones enforcing the provision that they get paid. I disagree with Pat on this a little bit. I mean, there's nothing faster than telling somebody you can't renew your permit to get them to pay their bill. If there's a dispute, you know, if there's a dispute about the bill or something, then it'll have to be resolved. But I, you know, I think, you know, threat of losing your permit is the type of thing you need to get deadbeats to pay. And, you know, I understand there might be issues about people who have disputes over bills and whatnot, and I know the service doesn't want to be in the debt dispute business, but, you know, as long as we're the ones requiring the observers, we ought to be the ones requiring that they get paid.
And I think we've covered our responsibilities by, as Rodney said, if they have an outstanding payment, then the observer provider can refuse to provide observers, and the vessel can't sail. And in addition, we have the ability to take enforcement action against someone. So I think we've got enough in there to cover our responsibility on it.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We did have quite a bit of discussion about this in the committee, and I think it does rise to a policy question because effectively we're taking a public trust resource that's being allocated to an individual for the specific purpose of compensation for the observer coverage. And so I think it is appropriately considered as a management question, and yet in our discussions with the service there in the committee, they indicated that they were trying to develop solutions to it. So there wasn't a committee motion, and that reflected the discussion we had. I think the sense was that the service was trying to develop a solution to this year, and so you know, at least my thinking was we might take a wait-and-see attitude this year and see how it plays out. But if it's not resolved in the future, I would be supportive, certainly, of revisiting it.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I agree with Pat on this. If we implement this, the observer program won't get collected until at least 12 months. If somebody has a debt on a boat 30 days overdue, they can easily lien the boat or, again, not provide any further services, and they'll collect in 60 days. So I just think we don't need this system. There's other ways to collect debt on a fishing vessel.
Anyone else on the council? Or the audience? Jim?
I've got more of a question than I have really a statement to make on this, but Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. Question is that how is this payment received or done? There's a payment for the observer himself, and there's a payment for administrative costs. Is that correct?
Amy?
Yeah, she's the one who gets all the money. Get up here.
Um, The way the payment is done, the government is removed from that process in the industry funded. So the payment for the observers is just for the at sea time, and it goes directly from the invoicing from the provider to the industry, to the vessel. And there's no costs associated with the overhead or processing or training of the observer.
No, but basic cost is somewhere in the area of $800 to $1,000 a day total, with the administrative costs and everything to that. It's more than a $375 the observer gets?
Yeah, that's not what the vessel is paying for the observer coverage. So they don't, the vessels, we currently use federal funds to cover the infrastructure costs of processing the data and training. So the fishing vessels don't assume those costs right now.
I'm still not quite getting it, Ollie.
So
what is the
11,
basic daily cost for an observer, please? Total.
You'd be better off asking the fisherman that, because I seriously don't know, but it's somewhere probably between $700 and $800.
Okay, that's close enough. What I'm getting at on this here is I can understand the problems associated with the boat paying for the observer and the observer provider being the one who goes after that. And I tend to think that his refusal to put somebody on board would handle that issue. My question had more to do with if the service is owed money for the administrative costs.
We do not get any money from the industry for the administrative costs. We pay the administrative costs. The only thing the industry pays is the at-sea observer time costs. So there are no issues here with our being owed any payments, because we don't get any money from anybody.
Well, then that's somewhere where my disconnect is, and that's why I was asking that question. My understanding, or I thought I understood, that the observer himself or person received in the area of $375 a day for the service charge, his pay, more or less. And then the additional costs were administrative costs, but that doesn't go back to the service?
Right. We do use a figure for the total cost of an observer day that covers both the payment to the observer provider, as well as our administrative costs. But that's not what the industry's paying. So when the industry pays for the observer, they're only paying for the observer at sea time and the observer provider costs. There are no costs that come back to the National Marine Fisheries Service.
Could those figures be provided at some point in time so there is a better understanding of what those numbers represent? Because I raised this issue once before when we were talking about the industry having to absorb the charges now that the funding ran out for the observers. And I understand how that part of it works, but I've never been quite clear, and I don't think anyone is, as to how those fees are distributed or you know, accounted for.
Yeah, there have been breakdowns in several of the amendment documents that have gone through the council process, but we can certainly provide that information again.
Yeah, I'd like to have that pointed out if at all possible. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anything further from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Two? Opposed? Six, seven, 15 opposed. Motion fails, 2-15. Sally, D?
Just the last slide of the presentation has three committee motions that are not directly related to this framework. The council may or may not want to act on any of them today, just pointing them out because they were committee motions. Motion number 6 from the committee was to recommend that the council support consideration of extending the exemption in the Great South Channel area in April through June for limited access IFQ permit holders if data supports this action. Document 5D is a correspondence the council received after the committee meeting and before this meeting. It's a little awkward in that the committee was basically requested from the public to consider possibly endorsing support for if there is a closure, there's an area within the channel that's closed to general category permits only for a spawning closure from April through June. And while there wasn't an official petition to the agency to reconsider that or lift that closure, what happened after the committee meeting is we did receive a petition. It's document 5D that was sent to the agency. We were copied on it. It's included in the binder as the official petition, and now, as I understand, this group is requesting full support from the full council, not just the committee, on additional support for the agency to consider this exemption. I can put the area on the board if you want to see it. It's actually figure 5 in document 6. Document 6 had the additional analyses for framework 21. If you wanted to be more familiar with the area, it's figure 5 on page 15 of document 6 is kind of a funny shaped region that was closed to the general category fishery for spawning reasons. But beyond that, I'm not familiar with the data in terms of the second part of the motion that would support this lift. I assume this would be a communication between the petition individuals and the agency.
So I do have a committee motion on this. I was pausing, not knowing if that should be offered, or perhaps if we get some feedback from NIMS before that would be offered.
Well, we do have the request, and we're analyzing it. And so this is we haven't done one of these in a while. Comes under the multi-species exemptions. But what we'll do is look at the observer information and make a determination. And if I remember correctly, there is some point in the process where the council has an opportunity to comment.
So if the chair agrees, then this motion, it seems like it would make sense to hold off on this. Then the committee could consider what the agency finds in reviewing the petition, and as the motion says, that at that point then the committee would recommend that the council support extending the exemption if the data supports this action. It sounds like NIMS will be able to provide some feedback to the committee, which can then make a more precise recommendation to the council.
That certainly seems the way we've done it in the past. That's the way to do it.
Go ahead. The second one is hopefully just as fast. I wasn't here for the priorities discussion yesterday, but the committee did pass without objection, including under consideration for Framework 42, consideration of changing the VMS positioning requirement for LAGC IFQ and incidental permits to occur once per hour rather than every 30 minutes, as it currently is required. There's some discussion about this in the meeting summary. Without objection, I'll just include this in the list of issues for Framework 22. If there isn't a problem.
See no objection.
And the last one is a segue for me to move and Tom to come up here. Is related to Yellowtail. There was the last committee motion is related to their recommendation to the Groundfish Committee, specifically related to how much of the Yellowtail ABC should be allocated to the scalloped fishery. Groundfish Committee's recommendation was 100% of what is needed for the 2010 fishing year, and that would drop down to 90% of what is needed for 2011 and 2012 to provide that incentive to reduce bycatch. Again, you requested a bunch of revenue impact information of the staff. Tom was going to walk us through a memo that we worked on, including that information. And then there is other groundfish motions that followed related to this. So we are technically done with Framework 21 at this point. if you want to pass a motion now to just include the whole package as is, or wait until we get through the Yellowtail information in case you want to revisit the scenario decision based on the Yellowtail analysis.
I think, Tom can come up now, but I think that if we can button up the Yellowtail issue, I'd prefer to do that, and then forward Framework 21 out the door. That would be my preference. I don't know how the council feels. I'll take comments on that, but okay.
While Tom's getting ready, it's document number 8 and document 11 behind tab 4.
Dee, can you come back up to the table? Yeah. You're not done yet.
His presentation's 12, too. Sorry. Mine was 11. His is 12.
I was just reminded by Rip that the Yellowtail action is a groundfish action. So I guess we could vote to submit Framework 21 now and get that buttoned up, and then we can have our Yellowtail discussion.
Yeah, you definitely can. The only reason I was raising before is if after this analysis you change your mind about the different Framework 21 scenarios, because you picked the one that requires the least amount of Yellowtail, I guess that's less likely now. But anyway, you might want to revisit your scenario decision based on this Yellowtail information was my only, but you, your preference. If you're feeling very assertive about your decisions and you don't need to revisit it, sure. Wrap it up.
I don't know. What's the pleasure of the council? Do you want to submit 21 now, or do you want to just go through the Yellowtail and then come back? Wrap it up? You want to finish something? Okay. All right, I'll entertain a motion on Framework 21 then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move to submit Framework 21 as amended today to National Marine Fisheries Service.
There, a second. Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed. Opposed. Abstentions. One abstention. Motion carries 16-0. One abstention. Okay. Thank you, Dave. Whenever you're ready, Tom.